This is Doc Mike, host of Right on the Left Coast podcast. This is a podcast about homestead living at the Ravenwood Homestead here in Oregon. We share our experiences and discuss topics that may affect living the homestead lifestyle. Hey, this is Doc Mike. Thanks for joining me here live either on Rumble or over on Real Liberty Media. I appreciate it very much. We're trying a little something new today. Yeah, there we go. Let me just switch to the camera for just a minute. We're just going to see how things go here. Tried this before and it was kind of rough with some frame drops and buffering and all that stuff. Who knows, though? We're going to give it a try. I wanted to tell you right off the bat, man, I had to run outside because this osprey, I told you about this osprey maybe a week or two ago. There's a whole family of osprey down in the valley next to my office. There was a family, like two adults and three kids, or one adult and four kids, although I think that's extremely unusual for osprey. But, okay, I'm watching things happen now. It's kind of crazy. Okay, never mind. Ignore it. Oh, but I do want to see the chat room on Rumble, so I'm going to move that over there. Okay, good. Are the bears on? Yeah, they are, but there's no bears. The bears are on, but there's no bears. It's okay. We're going to make it work. Okay, so that family of ospreys, one of them has kind of, you know, the kids, once they start flying, it's kind of like, okay, you're on your own, get out. Actually, I don't know if that's the way it is, but when it's time, they leave the nest and they go out on their own. Well, one of them has kind of taken up residence up here on the hill somewhere because it's been flying around right above our house, which is kind of cool. So now I've followed it from, you know, down along the river. And osprey are kind of fish eaters. They'll eat other things too, but they do eat some fish. So I don't know what it's doing up here, but it's been flying overhead, and you can hear it calling when it's flying overhead, you know, screeching. And so I had to run out and see it because Rochelle and Mason were out there watching it. Oh, and my eyes, man, my eyes have been killing me. I don't know, today it's pollens or something. I don't know what's going on, but yeah, it's terrible. But let's get through the normal introduction here now that we're cooking. Let's see, how is it going too? Oh, I'll look in a minute. This is Right on the Left Coast podcast. It's a podcast about the Ravenwood Homestead. This is the fastest hour on Real Liberty Media, and I don't turn left. I'm just a guy shining light on the darkness. And there really is no more news. I was just thinking, of course, I'm going to start out by diverging from the introduction. But I was just going to say, I think it's time we make all the shows that are on TV, there should be some way to make them change their name from news. Because they're not news at all. It's just propaganda. It's entertainment. They're all entertainment shows. They don't call themselves news anymore because they can be held accountable for things they say. So they just all call themselves, you know, I mean, they're labeled, categorized as entertainment. So we need to make them change that. Hey, if you are on some social media site, would you please post that we're live on Real Liberty Media and on Rumble? And remember, every Sunday, Hal Anthony does Behind the Woodshed from at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Every Sunday, the guy does 2 solid hours of information. I love his show. I think you will too. Head on over, listen to Hal Anthony tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can catch the Discerning Observer podcast, my other kind of political and news show, on Wednesdays when I decide to do it. I don't know, man. It's not my favorite anymore. Yeah, like all week long, I think of stuff, like, and I'm just flat sarcastic about stuff, you know, in the news. So I don't know. I'm torn because I like doing this. I like doing a podcast. I like doing the video thing. I'm not very video friendly, I don't think, but I don't care. It's just a hobby for me, and I enjoy doing it. So I look for opportunities to do it. But then when Wednesday rolls around and I'm thinking about doing it, I'm just like, man, there's so many other things that I would rather do. And I don't know that there's enough stuff going on the homestead to do a twice a week show on the homestead. You know, I don't want to be like redundant or whatever. Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe I'll do it and just be snarky. Thanks for the comment there. I appreciate that. Seriously, I do. And I can be, man. I mean, I am constantly when I'm at work, when I'm just enjoying the day, listening to other shows that I like to listen to. I'm pretty snarky, so maybe I should just do that. It'd be fun, entertaining for me anyway, if not for anybody else. Man, I think this is going pretty well. Let me just double check here. Oh my God, I cannot believe that. So it says there are zero dropped frames. All right, so maybe this is going to work. We'll try it out. Okay, so for those of you who don't know, when you have broadcast software, it'll give you some stats, live stats. Like it tells me my CPU is working 9% right now, broadcasting at 30 frames per second. I'm also recording. I'm also broadcasting on Shoutcast, which goes to Real Liberty Media. And, this thing's pumping right along. So I guess that I paid for a little increase in bandwidth. And, it's not much because I don't have a fiber optic. I don't even have a cable coming into my house. It's over the air, and it's not a satellite. It's terrestrial radio that sends a signal to my house for internet, which is fine. I like it like that. It's working fine. It just wasn't working fine enough to do video, but now apparently it is. We'll see when it's all said and done. We got a long ways to go. So we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on the homestead here. I hope you guys are all doing great. I honestly mean that. I think about some of you that I talk to during the week, which there's only a couple people I talk to during the week, but hey, somebody moved into Sheridan and I don't know how they found me on Rumble, but they actually left a message on one of my shows and they're looking for a dentist. And I want to say welcome to you. And they have kind of a funny name. It's like, Don't Float the Air Biscuits or something like that, which I don't know what that means. So if it's dirty, sorry. I don't think it is. I think it's just a thing. It's kind of a funny name though, but they're looking for a dentist. And so hopefully they'll look me up. It would be fun to make that connection, you know. People who are like-minded, they really liked one of the shows I did. And they made a comment, left a long comment about it. Or maybe it's a troll, and that's okay too. I like trolls. That's when you tell you actually made it, when you start getting trolled by people. So, I'm not kidding. It has been so busy around the homestead this week. And it's only going to, this is the time of year. So we had that time during the winter where you kind of clean up from fall and you kind of prepare and get ready for winter and all the storms and rain and snow and all that stuff. And you do all that. And then you kind of just are in kind of quiet mode for the winter time. You know, it's dark, you know, it's dreary, days are short. Although I love that season, but you know, for some it can be dreary and I suffer from that seasonal affective disorder, I think. You know, I don't know. I don't like labeling stuff, but it seems to me it's pretty normal. When the days are shorter, you're supposed to rest more. I mean, that's what I think. It's like you're not going to be growing a whole lot of stuff. You're not going to be producing a lot of stuff. If you have cattle, that's a different story. But you know, if you're homesteading, you're going to be kind of doing maintenance and preparation for whatever's coming next. I got to get the chat room up here again, because if anybody chats, I want to be able to see it. Yeah, that's true. Let's see, how would I do that? Oh, yeah, that'll work. Awesome. Good. So now is getting to be that time, you know, where we did all the preparation work. We got plants going early. We already ran through all the vegetables that were in the hydroponic unit. We're going to start over, which is kind of cool. We're harvesting some stuff like every day. We could go down and pick kale every single day and put kale in our salad, put kale in soups, put kale on, you know, burgers or whatever, you know, people like or don't like kale. I don't care. It's very good for you. And I mean, it's grown like crazy. And I just now, when I was out looking at the osprey, I looked at the garden. I'm like, holy crap, the garden has like doubled in size in the last couple of days. The stuff that's growing out there. So, you know, yeah, I have a ton of stuff to talk about. Honestly, it's crazy. So Crystal, our daughter, and her friend, hang on one sec, I got to do something that I don't want to do on camera necessarily. All right. You know, it's kind of like I had kale in my teeth. I don't know. I don't know if I did or not, but okay. Anyway, you know, Crystal and her friend Whitney, so our daughter and her friend, they have just really kind of taken to this whole cooking, homesteading thing, and they are producing stuff like locally here on the homestead so that we don't have to go to the store and buy some stuff. So the most recent additions here are kind of dairy products, right? So like, she was trying to make yogurt and she had a couple attempts that didn't actually turn out exactly how she wanted. So we had some other stuff. We had some sour cream. We had some, cheese, we have whey, of course. And, but then, you know, she actually was successful and now we have yogurt. And I guess once you kind of have that down, it's pretty easy to keep it going. And man, the yogurt is fantastic. So delicious. Probably some of this stuff I shouldn't say because the feds will show up and either try and stop us or try and stop the people where we get our supplies. But let's just say, yeah, let's keep it simple. So she gets her supplies locally and makes, you know, products right here at home. And it's so incredible because you save so much money. And we don't have to save money, but the idea that we're making stuff right here, we're in full control of whatever goes into that stuff. So if anything goes wrong, there's nobody to blame but us. And she's of the mindset that she doesn't want to go shopping at a store anymore, which is pretty amazing. Because when you think about homesteading, and I think people who live, I'll say air quotes, off the grid, I think that's the goal. Is that you grow what you need to survive, and that's how you live and survive, is by doing that. But her and her friend Whitney have taken it to, like, they're really going full on with this stuff. And it's so beneficial, mostly, I'll tell you the side story in a minute. It's so beneficial to us just to be able to do it, you know, just like have our own yogurt, make our own cheese, probably cottage cheese. Oh yeah, cream cheese. There was some cream cheese made. It's really amazing because when Rochelle and I started this 20 years ago, you know, it was kind of a survival thing. Like, okay, there's going to be a recession. There's going to be a shortage of food. I mean, that was back when you know who was elected, and even before that. I mean, we really didn't expect that the kids who were kids at that time, you know, 10 years old or something. Well, maybe 14, 13, something. We really didn't have any idea that they would actually carry this on to the next level. We didn't really expect that they would, you know, we kind of figured they would, you know, do their own thing, whatever that thing was. And to have them actually still be a part of the homestead and to actually desire to be here and do this thing is so gratifying. It's so satisfying to not only have done it ourselves, but then to see that that's going to carry on into the next generation and probably the next generation after that. Who knows? But it's really been a tremendous blessing. And let me tell you, the food around here, you know, it's not that Rochelle and I sucked at cooking, but it's a whole new level now. It's like we have master chefs living at the homestead, and they just cook delicious food, and it's healthy for you. So, you know, we get probably, you know, 5 healthy meals a week, healthy days of meals a week, and then 1 or 2 days where we go, you know, like we ordered pizza tonight. Because, you know, the master chefs are over at the coast getting ready for a 4th of July celebration that's, you know, pretty awesome at the coast. And the weather is going to be just unbelievable this week. So, like, for the last week, we've had blue sky and sunshine. Maybe a tiny bit of marine layer coming in the morning. But mostly, it's just been flat out gorgeous. And I mean so gorgeous that we just sit outside in the shade and we watch the birds and we watch the bees and we watch the flowers and we check for snakes and see how that population's doing. And we just, you know, watch a ball game outside and, you know, have some cold beverages and just enjoy it. And it's like so freaking nice out that you don't even want to come in the house. So you find other stuff to do, like get your mowing done or move some dirt. Or I'll tell you about another project that we did in this past week, which this actually be a really good lesson for everybody. But let me kind of cover a couple of my personal things just to make sure I get them checked off here. So this is kind of unbelievable. I am done with shoulder physical therapy, which I just want to tell you. That 2 months ago, I was 100% sure I was going to have surgery on my left shoulder because I had lost so much range of motion, so much strength, and I had so much pain, you know, and after an MRI, which showed some inflammation and some subcapsular tears and inflammation, I was like, okay, well, that's it. We'll just have to get this surgery done and, you know, move on. Well, guess what? So 1 month of physical therapy twice a week, and by doing the stuff that they told me to do when I'm not at physical therapy, you know, kind of continue to do the physical therapy stuff at home, I got released on Thursday. It was my last day. I expected a whole nother month. They told me in the beginning it'd probably be 2 months. And here a month later, man, unbelievable. I have probably 100% range of motion. I don't have 100% of the strength back, but I have so much of it back that I can do most things, and I just have to keep working on that strengthening, you know, not overdo it, but to keep it, you know, keep my shoulder socket together so they don't slop around. So that was kind of amazing. I didn't expect that. Just like a month and a half ago when I went to the cardiac doc and they said I was going to be, I could stop taking my blood thinners in August, it blew me away because I thought I was going to be on blood thinners the rest of my life. Well, so what I'm trying to really say here is, you know, don't give up. Like, Yeah, sometimes things are tough, and I'm telling you, as you get older, you'll see things get tough because stuff hurts for no reason or for a reason, and you just get it can beat you down. It can really beat you down and make it feel like, you know, maybe it's time to check out. And I'm not saying I was suicidal or anything. I wasn't. It's just that, you know, you can see why life is only so long. Because you couldn't take it if you had to live forever. I'm pretty sure it wouldn't be too fun. Although I'm sure there are evil bastards out there who are working on that. So what else is cruise mode, shoulder PT? Oh, I wanted to give you an update on the cybersecurity course. I actually finished the first course. There's 8 courses. I think I'm just going to go ahead and continue to do it and finish it. And I'll tell you why. One is because I'm going to be leaving dentistry. I know the person who's looking for a dentist is not going to like to hear that, but, oh, hey, I got to check something again. I just want to check progress here. Still no dropped frames. Yay. That's pretty awesome, man. I'm pretty happy about that. All right, so I know the person who is looking for a dentist isn't really going to like that news a lot, but you know, it's time. I can tell that my time is coming it's time to put it down and walk away and, you know, let some other people jump in and take over, do the right thing for people. I've done the right thing for people as long as I can. I've always felt like I've given people the best service that they could get. Honestly, it was never about money for me. Although that's why I wanted to go into dentistry, is I wanted to make money. I didn't want to be poor like I was when I was a kid. I wanted to have money to be able to buy stuff and do stuff and help other people. And I've done that my whole life. And now it's time to pull the plug. Soon, I'm going to go down to 2 days a week on January 1st. And this whole cybersecurity thing, you know, I've been into computers my whole life. I've learned multiple programming languages. I've written programs for companies and people and myself. And I think it's right up my alley. And I was actually thinking as I was going through the first course of the Google cybersecurity certification program. Google isn't paying me to say that, by the way, but they can. I'll send them a note and see if they won't. I'm kidding. You know, with my history, having worked in health services my whole life, I actually went through several Joint Commission on Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations, otherwise known as JCO. I've gone through several of those evaluations and always scored well on those. We always did really well. So I have like a lot of experience with HIPAA, the Health Information, Health Information Protection and Accountability Act, I think is what that stands for. I'm not 100% sure. But it's basically protecting people's, you know, health information from being hacked, you know, and having it all over the world or on the dark web or being held ransom. And I was just thinking, you know, I'm kind of like I have the perfect amount of experience in all these areas to do something in that field, like help dental offices secure their patient information, you know, give them a little advice or consultation, or work for a company that does that and help secure, you know, healthcare information and stuff like that. So I think that's going to work out. And, you know, whether I get employed or not, I really don't care. It would be awesome to not retire and to make less money and pay less taxes and not have to pay so much for Medicare. Oh, my gosh, don't get me going on that. But, I think there's something there. I think it's going to work out. And you know what? I've been very disciplined. The last show I was talking about, you know, setting aside the time, setting aside time to do the work. And I was kind of thinking about that while I was prepping for this show. And I was like, and here I am 2 weeks later. Like, I just started that course like a week ago. I heard about it 2 weeks ago. And so, you know, when I talk about like having fun, I've been very kind of structured at putting that study time in my day. Not every day, but at least every other day. And of course, I got to get my cardio done. So I have 40 minutes of cardio I do 6 days a week. I have an hour or two of study time. I've only spent 4 hours on that first course and, you know, completed it. So, and I had some people ask me, well, do you think anybody, you know, would have done it that efficiently? And I was like, I don't know. But it's made for people who know nothing. So what if it took you 8 hours to do it? Like twice as long as it took me. Well, you'd still be done in a week if you did it, you know, an hour a day, because there's 8 days in a week, right? I'm kidding. I know there's only seven. But I mean, so like in a week you'd finish one course, and there's eight courses. So if you finish it in 8 weeks, well, it took you 8 weeks to, you know. And I'm not encouraging people to do it. I'm just saying, you know, it seems like something that's a pretty reasonable thing to do. And, you know, I'm not looking to make a ton of money at it. It's not going to be like I'm going to progress to some, you know, lofty position where, you know, I'm the head of some cybersecurity company or any. I really, it's just a, like my goal these days is to have fun and to do something different. So I will continue to have fun because, you know, it's computer programming, it's SQL statements, it's, you know, looking for hacks, security breaches, and, you know, packet sniffing, and, you know, all that kind of stuff that I learned throughout my life on my own. And now I can just put it to use for something else, you know, and keep me off the tractor maybe a few days a week, but still having fun. So, okay, you know, personal updates, that's where that stuff is. So I wanted to tell you about the chicken coop and the chicken situation here, because I think this is kind of a valuable lesson that I experienced and I can pass on. So, you know, we added all these guineas here. We added the guinea fowl, what, 3 months ago, probably March, April, May, June. No, probably. Yeah, I think it was April, May, June, July. Yeah, probably April or late March or April. We added the guinea fowl. Now we already had like 30 birds and then we added, we had 26 birds and then we added 14 guinea fowl, but along with the guinea fowl, we added a turkey, a couple other chickens, 4 ducks. I think that's it. So anyway, our number of birds more than doubled, but we had them in the same space, and we thought that that would be fine. But then Crystal said one day, because the egg count had been low for a long time, like a few weeks, and Crystal said, well, you know, chickens won't lay eggs if they're crowded. And I got to tell you, honestly, I kind of in my mind, I started laughing because I was thinking all these commercial producers that pack chickens in like, you know, like sardines, and they're just laying eggs like crazy. So I was like, well, yeah, I think they still lay eggs even if they're crowded. But if they don't know any better, that's the thing. Our chickens all had their space and they were all happy, and we doubled the number of individuals and had them all crowded in the space. And I'm not kidding, you could actually hear the tension in the coop and outside of the coop. So you'd have birds kind of pecking and chasing each other and just a lot of squawking going on, and you could just kind of feel the tension, right? So listen to this, it's kind of crazy. But so our chicken coop had had three rooms. It had the north room, the center room, and the south room, and they were all divided with walls and a door each. And so we were thinking about how we could expand, you know, the amount of room that they had, to live in. And we were thinking, oh, we're going to have to build something or whatever. And I go, you know what? I go, why don't we just knock that wall down and double the room size? Because each room was the same size. And so we did. And I mean, when we mentioned it, like Shaq, the contractor in the family, Crystal's husband, our son-in-law, he just like went and got the stuff and went and knocked that wall down, built them another roosting ramp frame, and put some more nest boxes in. And like, so that was last weekend, I think. And today we got 13 eggs. So, and you could just tell, like, the birds were quieter, they were calmer, they weren't stressing out, you know. Then everybody was kind of getting along, they're just doing their thing, they go outside, you know, and roam the countryside and come in at night, and it's all quiet. And so I think what's important is to think about that as you're expanding, you know, your farm, your homestead, your flock, whatever, that you be mindful. Because, you know, I think everybody starts out thinking, we're going to have some chickens, and so we can have some eggs. And then it goes pretty well, and you go, well, let's add a few more chickens, you know. We could use a few more eggs, or we can, you know, if we don't use them all, we can share them with neighbors, which is always a good thing, you know. Now we have like 3 dozen eggs that we'll be sharing with people in the community. You know, and then pretty soon it's like, wow, so, you know, we're kind of providing eggs for people, you know, and we're doing so well, let's add some more birds this year. And then, and pretty soon, you know, your chickens that have been used to having a certain amount of room, now they're starting to feel crowded. And it's like, you know, it's like if you've lived in the country for 10 years, and then you have to go back to the city and you're just packed in an apartment somewhere, and you have to get on that public transportation to go to town because they don't like cars in town. And, you know, you're just like crowded and somebody's always in your space. Oh, I hate that. Well, they don't like it either, especially when they're used to having some space, more space for themselves. So keep that in mind, you know, before you add birds, think about, is there enough room? Not just is there enough room to put 6 more birds in, but is there enough room to put 6 more birds in your flock and everybody still be comfortable, still have room? And I am not one of those people that thinks, you know, the egg layer chickens and those big production places should be free range. I don't care. I really don't care. I don't think about it, you know, on a daily basis. What I care about is that on the homestead, like, we have tranquility, right? I guess that's what I care about. On the homestead, I want animals to be comfortable. Even if I'm going to slaughter them and eat them, I want them to be comfortable while they're living. Give them a good life while they're alive. We had hogs for a while, many years ago. We grew 4 hogs. And the reason we did that was a long time ago. That was back in the 90s. And the reason I did that is because I wanted to know if I could raise a meat animal, feed it every day, clean up after it every day, you know, make sure all its needs are met every day, and then kill it and eat it. Because I think for a lot of people, that's not an easy thing to do. And even though I was a hunter at the time, like I would hunt deer and I would hunt elk and I'd hunt bear and cougar, although I never got a bear or a cougar, there's a lot of things that sometimes you shoot that you don't eat, like coyotes and sometimes coons and skunks and possums and stuff that wants to take your meat from you. But it was different than raising a domestic animal knowing that you were going to consume their meat. So we did that a long time ago. And even then, we wanted to make sure, like, our four pigs had, they had play toys. Like, they had a ball that that was hanging from a rope in the area where they lived, so that they could play with this ball. And they had one on the floor that they could kick around and roll with their nose. And I mean, they had time to enjoy their life. And when it came time to slaughter them, I'll tell you, I was like feeling it a bit, like, you know, these guys, like, they haven't been my buddies. It's not like they've been my pets, but they've been in my care. Like, I provided care to these animals. And when it was time for them to go, it did kind of suck. But I knew that they lived a decent life while they were with me versus whatever else they could have gone to, other than free-ranging wild hogs. I guess they could have become, but that wasn't the case. I wonder how wild hog tastes, by the way. I should find out. I should go on a wild hog hunt. We don't have enough of them here in Oregon. And it's kind of funny. So wild hog hunting in Oregon is so stupid. Now, just think about this. Like in Texas, like in, I'm sure a bunch of other states, they have so many wild hogs. It's just like, yeah, kill them. Please kill them and eat them, but at least kill them. In Oregon and Northern California, I guess there's just enough wild hogs that people who own the property want to charge you like an arm and a leg, so it's not even worth going and shooting a wild hog because the property owners charge so much money that it's just not worth it. So I guess if you really wanted to just go kill a wild hog, you would pay this exorbitant amount of money to go hunt on a fenced-in property somewhere. And I'm not talking like a 10 acres. I'm talking about, you know, 5, 10, 100,000 acres. Go out and hunt a wild hog and bring back this hog and eat bacon that probably cost you $50 a pound. I'm not interested in doing that. But I would like to see what wild hog tastes like. I'll tell you the difference in a minute. I got to wet my whistle. So this is what I'm kind of wondering. So I shot a wild turkey before and, you know, was trying to eat that. I mean, no, I don't mean trying to eat it. Although, you could say I was trying to eat it. It does not taste like turkey. I mean, that's not true. It tastes like turkey, but it doesn't taste like domestic turkey. I mean, when you cook a wild turkey, like in your mind, you're like, is this turkey? Oh, yeah, I do kind of. There is a little hint of turkey in this turkey. Whereas when you, you know, cook a butterball or whatever else they grow for Thanksgiving, man, it's like turkey, right? Like that thing is cooking in the oven. You're like, oh man, that turkey smells good. I can't wait till that thing is done. We're going to dig into that juicy big piece of meat. Nope. Wild turkey is like lean. And it's just different, you know, it's just different. So I kind of wonder if wild hog is the same. Like obviously it would be leaner because they're wild, number one. They have to work for a living, you know, instead of just hanging around getting fed until they're fat enough to slaughter. But oh my God, that bacon was good, come to think of it. Yeah, that bacon was really good. And the short pork shoulder blade steaks, oh my Lord, and the... Yeah. No, I mean, really, raising your own meat is the way to go because you know exactly what went into it. You know how it was treated, how it was handled. And you, when you're eating it, you're just like, oh, yeah, that was worth it. Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a little, gosh, I'm kind of cruising through this. That's okay. If we have to cut it short, we can cut it short. Hang on, I think I'm going to cough. Maybe not. Oh, yeah, I did want to tell you. This is kind of funny. Our guineas, when going back to the chicken coop and overcrowding kind of thing, it wasn't overcrowded, but it was crowded. Well, I guess you could say it was overcrowded because they were cranky. So they didn't really like it very much. So, yeah, I would say that's overcrowding if you've made them uncomfortable. And believe me, let's say if we started out a flock of 50 chickens and they just all grew up together and then they went into the chicken coop and they all found their place, they'd be fine. I mean, they'd be fine. Like, they didn't know that they had more room. Instead of 20 birds in that space, there'd be 50 birds, and they all grew up doing it, and they just found their place, and they would be fine. But when you start out with like 14, and then you increase to 20, and then 26, and then all of a sudden 56 or whatever it is, yeah, they feel that pressure instantly. Like, oh my God, you know, now there's twice as many of us, and I used to have 2 square feet to stand in here or perch on, and now I'm shoulder to shoulder with some of these guinea hens, and I don't even like them. No, but apparently our guinea fowl are coop trained. Now, what I mean by that is they'll come in at night. They'll go in at night so that we can shut the door. And guineas kind of are notorious for not wanting to go in the coop at night. They want to go roost in trees and out in the wild. And especially around here, they'll go out in the forest, you know, and an owl will get them, or a osprey, or a fox, or a coyote, or a bobcat, or a cougar, or a coon, or a possum, or, you know, yeah, there's tons of things. Or they'll lay their eggs out there on the ground in the woods, and then they'll sit on them until a predator comes along and eats them. But ours, for some reason, I guess because we kind of conditioned them with the rest of the chickens. I mean, when they got big enough to go into the coop, then they did what the chickens did, which was they go out during the day, they forage, and when the chickens came in at night, I think the guinea fowl just kind of followed them in, like, oh, I guess this is what we do here. And so it's been kind of cool because we don't have to worry about predators and losing, you know, not that we would really worry. I mean, if a guinea fowl didn't like go, like we do a count every night. And if we were to count them and there was one missing, this is what we would do. We would go out, search the property like one time, see if we could spot it, like in certain hiding places, like they like to go under a certain couple bushes, or they'll go down in the barn, like the regular barn, or, you know, they'll just hide out in certain places. And if we don't find them there, then it's like, okay, well, we're shutting the door and we're going to bed. Because it's just a chicken, right? It's not like our favorite pet in the world. It's not like we're going to starve to death because we lost one or two or six chickens. That's the way it is on the farm. You lose stuff to predators. And you lose stuff because sometimes birds aren't the smartest animals in the world. I can guarantee you that there's kind of a, honestly here, I think there's a toss-up between which of these birds are stupider, guineas or chickens. I'm not 100% sure, and neither one has really gone out of their way to kind of disprove this idea that they're the two dumbest birds in the world. And I love them dearly, sort of. No, I do. They're awesome animals. They're doing great work for us, providing us food. I'm very blessed to have them, but oh my goodness. Yeah, not the brightest bulbs in the pack, that's for sure. Getting back to where I was, Let's see. Oh my gosh. I was talking about the food being created here on the homestead. I wanted to go back to that a minute because I've left out two very important things. One is the cherries here on the homestead are just about ready. Well, I guess they're ready because I've been watching them for a couple weeks and I noticed the color coming on and I was like, okay, yeah, they'll be ready by late July, August. That's usually when I eat them, like probably the last week in July and the first 2 weeks of August, and then it's time to prune the trees and, you know, let everything go. Well, Crystal and the grandkids, went and picked a bunch of these cherries, and I was looking at them, even in the bowls, the buckets they picked them in, and I was like, man, are those things ready? And about half of them, well, I don't know, because I didn't eat that many, but they said mostly they're sweet, so that means some of them weren't, but this is what they did. They made pie filling, or I should say they canned cherries. Some of them were pie filling, and I don't know, some of them were probably just cherries, or I don't know, cherry jam or something. But we have a ton of freaking cherries processed. This was all in one night. They picked them. When I came home from work, it was Friday afternoon, because I only work 4 hours on Friday by design. So I came home. They were picking cherries. And then that evening, I see cans sitting on the counter, jars, mason jars, that were canned. And they had pitted all these cherries and put them up. And this is what I'm saying, kind of about like starting somewhere, you know, like we were lucky when we got this property, it had cherry trees, which was awesome. But everything else we've planted, you know, the almond tree, the pear tree, the apple tree, the fig trees. We had a nectarine. I don't think it's going to work. We had a peach. It's not going to work. Pear. Did I say pear? Anyway, all the fruit trees are doing awesome. And it's fantastic. One thing about being, you know, living a homestead lifestyle is somebody's got to be available to do that work. So if somebody's working, you know, an eight-hour-a-day job to support the family or whatever, you know, there's got to be people available to go harvest stuff and then put it up, however putting it up is, which reminds me, some of those cherries are drying, and I have to go check on them to make sure they don't get over-dried and they get dried properly. But you know, it's important to have somebody who can actually do this stuff, because if there's no time and you don't stay up all night doing stuff, yeah, it's not going to get done. So it's really a blessing that we have just the right, we have like this commune going right now that's family, that's just taking care of stuff, man, just like putting food up and harvesting and processing and keeping this lifestyle going, which is fantastic. But earlier when I was talking about how great it is that you know, so many of these things are going on and that we're getting healthier food, you know, that's grown right here, processed right here. Well, Crystal has been on this thing for months now, maybe a year or two. Yeah, I think it's been over a year. She started a sourdough culture, and she's keeping that sourdough culture going, and she's really broadened her horizons on the bread that she makes and pizza crust and everything, crackers. And she keeps her sourdough starter fed and handled correctly. And she bought this bread loaf pan that's like a commercial size bread loaf pan. I didn't know there was a difference. I should have. Like, if you think about this for 2 seconds, you would be like, well, of course there's got to be a commercial size bread loaf pan, because how does a bread loaf get to be that size in the store when ours are much smaller? Well, it's because they use bigger pans, right? Well, so Crystal has like a family size bread pan, like a commercial size bread pan. I'm not kidding. It's huge. Well, she made like multiple loaves of bread. She made a sourdough white. She made a sourdough wheat. She made a white and she made a wheat or maybe a sprouted grain or something like that. But there were these giant loaves of bread and they were flipping delicious. But you can only eat so much bread. And I'm not saying like, I'm just saying like health-wise, even though I know that bread is better for me, is still not going to be good to eat too much bread. It's just not. So she might be, oh, she makes waffles too with that sourdough starter. Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. But anyway, yeah, so when I was saying, it's all good. Like, it's all good that we have bread made here at home from sourdough starter that's made here at home. We have a wheat source now so that when we get our flour mill, we'll be milling our own wheat. And it's coming from an organic local source, so we can go check them out and see if they have pesticides on their, you know, see if they're spraying atrazine on their wheat when it's ready to harvest. I can guarantee you they're not. But yeah, we'll be doing our own flour so we don't depend on commercially produced flour. It's none of it's good for you. I keep going back to this thought that, and unfortunately, not everybody is able to get to the point where they can produce their own food. But I go back to this idea all the time that I have great respect for the farmers. I don't want to say anything negative about them, but the bottom line is they don't care so much about you and your health. They care about producing food for the masses. And if some of the masses get hurt or sick or die in the process, not really their problem. They just have to produce so much wheat, so much corn, so much oat, so much rye, so much whatever every year so that everybody can eat. And the government doesn't care either. I can guarantee you that. Oh, well, the government cares this much. They care enough to find stuff to find the farmers for, right? Just like they find everybody else, you know, through OSHA, through regulations, through, you know, climate, you know, fantasy stuff. You know, they care enough to penalize people, but not so much, you know, if you get E. coli in your, you know, butter lettuce in the salad mix they sell in the store. It's like, oh yeah, hey, if you have this certain salad, you know, that was produced between this and has these lot numbers, you should probably get rid of it because, you know, you could get E. coli, which could kill you. Generally doesn't, but it could. It's going to make you very sick. And if you're compromised in any other way, and the risk goes up that you could die from E. coli, you know, infection, you know, and don't make me go into, you know, how E. coli gets on butter lettuce again, because that's a disgusting idea, but it does. And they don't care. They're not going to go back and trace down where those few leaves of butter lettuce came from, or arugula or romaine, and go, okay, so which illegals did you have here working that day? And, you know, we're going to do a DNA test to see if their E. coli matches the E. coli on this romaine lettuce. No, they're not going to do that. They don't care. It's like, hey, you know, you took your chances. You bought that stuff from a supermarket. We're not going to go back and find out whose E. coli that belonged to. We're just going to hopefully, you know, warn you that it's out there, don't eat it, and hopefully not too many will die, but we really don't care. And the farmers who harvested that really don't care. You know, they comply as much as they have to comply. Like, how many outhouses do they have on the property? How far away from the workers? And, you know, is there sanitation available, you know, out there? I don't know. I hope it works out, but it'd be better if you had all that control. If you took control of your own food production and accumulation, acquiring food. You know, and that doesn't mean you have to grow it all. There's so many options out there with community-supported agriculture, the local farm. What is that? We have some produce stands between here and McMinnville, the closest town of any significance. So in 15 miles, there's two. They're right alongside the highway, one on the right and one on the left, or one on the north and one on the south. And they do buy some stuff from local farmers, but they grow a lot of the stuff that they sell right there. And you would be able to track down where that stuff came from, and it would be good for you to go support something like that. You know, go buy your fresh veggies and fruit right from a stand like that. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a good place to start. You know, if you can't grow all your own food, hook up with the locals who do. And find out, you know, do they use pesticides? Do they use herbicides? And how much? And do they spray it directly on the plant, or do they spot spray weeds? I'm not saying either one of those things is good. They're not. But if you're not able to grow your own food and you want to have a little more control, that is a good place to start. Because if something was wrong, you could go right back to him and go, hey, this eggplant made me sick. Now I think there's something wrong with it. You know, and maybe they don't want to make people sick because they want everybody to come back and buy their produce, and they don't want to get a bad reputation because they're selling right there to the local community. So it's a good option. Keep that in mind. What else have we got? We have 3 minutes left, too. Yeah, so, man, it's been crazy here with strawberries, cherries, bread, milk products, and just food in general. It's just been crazy. Okay. Hey, I did have a couple of stories. Oh, this one, I'm just going to roll this up so you see the title of this. Oh, wait a minute. How do I? Oh, I know. It'll come up. So when you see the title of this, it says aluminum. The brain toxin found everywhere and ways to remove it. This was a great story out of the Epoch Times health section, and I'll try and put that link in my notes. I haven't even really read this yet, but I wanted to put it out there because Alzheimer's is apparently one of the things that, oh yeah, there we go, that aluminum causes problems with. So I thought that would be an interesting article. The one other thing I wanted to mention, this was funny, and I'm just going to tell you, wait, how much time do I have? Oh, 57 seconds. Okay, so there's a story on mRNA COVID-19 vaccine should be labeled gene therapy products, peer-reviewed paper. Now, here's what kind of bothered me about this story is number one, I don't think I have time. I don't. I'll pick up on that when we come back next week. Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, or Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern, I'll be a bit snarky and do a political show. Hey, let me check one more thing before I go off here. 0.1% frame drops in a one-hour broadcast. I'd say that that's probably doable. Anyway, hey, thanks you guys for listening. You catch Hal Anthony Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern time. That's tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern time. Hal Anthony, Behind the Woodshed, and you can catch me Wednesday and Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Thanks, bye. See you next time on Right on the Left Coast podcast. Thank you for listening.